live in the studio, getting ready for this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show and Bob Davis Podcast 592. This is, of course, going to air after the inauguration, and today is Inauguration Day, so now it's all over but the shouting. And I'm not going to cover specifics in the inaugural because... in this particular podcast, because it's unnecessary, I want to talk about, as you'll hear, some other issues and some concerns about the future and some ideas for the future. And the cool part is I broke out the 80s bumpers because I thought, well, if Trump's going to be like Reagan, then we should switch to 80s bumpers. So let's go ahead and roll segment one of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show number 62. Here we go. Welcome to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome. In this show, with the inauguration of Donald J. Trump to be the nation's 45th president, it's the end of one political era and the beginning of another. Now, most TV and radio shows, reporting, headlines, social media is caught up with telling you what's going to happen, right? I'm not going to do that. I hate that. I hate to predict the future because I can't predict the future. A lot of reasons for that. One, I don't like to be wrong. But the second thing is, I just don't think that you can predict the future. And I think most media is really caught up with this idea that they're somehow going to predict the future. In fact, I've actually been under a self-imposed news blackout most of the last few weeks, just occasionally kind of scanning and being aware of what is being said and what is being done. Because I want to see what actually happens with this new administration. And truth be told, some of the so-called reporting about the new administration's goals and ideas is purely speculative at best. At worst, it's simply a jumbled mess of he said, she said, with some quotes to fill out the story. And yes, certainly when it comes to outlets like the New York Times, it's very well written. It gives a feeling of legitimacy. But when you drill down into this kind of reporting, it may as well have been some kind of BuzzFeed rewrite by a third-year journalism student. No, wait, actually... That would be better, because the third-year journalism student might actually be better at writing out the story than some of the people at the New York Times. Anyway, one of the worst things that I happened to run across coming out of my self-imposed news blackout at the end of last week was an article in which several of Donald Trump's biographers, whatever those are, commented on what his presidency would be like and whether he had quote-unquote changed. Or a recent Keith Olbermann Facebook video that purported to be nonpartisan, you may have seen it, but in fact challenged Trump's Christmas cards and tweets as some sort of indicator of his character. This is ridiculous. Even if you hate Trump or oppose Trump politically, it's ridiculous. I don't think anybody has any real idea of what kind of administration Donald Trump will have. It's just a repeat of the same thing I said all through the campaign, which was I don't think that Donald Trump has any real idea of what he wants to do. Maybe it's good, maybe it's bad. I do think this is the beginning of a new political era. Many reasons for saying that, going back to covering the 2016 campaign on the road and touring the U.S. in 2016, to a certain extent, this would have been the beginning of a new political era, even if Hillary Clinton was inaugurated Friday rather than Trump, because Trump changed politics and presidential politics in this country in 2016. But there are forces now in the world that are engines behind what I think is a great historic turning point, a turning point that probably would have happened and will happen regardless of who is president of the United States. It's not a turning point that's supposed to occur on a dime in a given year or even decade, but it's a turning point that's coming regardless. And I think now with Trump, it's going to come faster. because the reality is that a person who sits in the highest political office in any country, especially the United States, which, by the way, is still the most significant country in the world, is, of course, important. But social, economic, and demographic trends may influence. I almost said democratic trends. Demographic trends may influence the next few years in this country and across the world as much as any individual, if not more. This is probably the one thing that most people, whether they supported the Democrat or Republican candidate or some other party's candidate or had a champion prior to the nominating conventions, are not aware of. And it's not that people are stupid or even ill-informed, although there are people that are stupid and ill-informed. It is that the whole media biosphere in this country is geared to personalities and reaction. We do not discuss substantive issues. We do not read or hear about substantive issues unless we seek them out. So most people don't dig into substance in social media or in so-called civil conversation because we're just not prepared to discuss them. What we are prepared to discuss, apparently, is conspiracy theories, shouting down opposition, calling people names, gossiping, and making dire predictions about our personal future and the future of the people that we agree with under the tyranny of one political leader or another and the parties that they represent. And we identify by a flag, a party flag, as opposed to anything else. And this is what most of the media does, because this is what people watch and listen to and click on. This kind of surface coverage, generally useless in decision-making, certainly not what people are looking at decision-making levels. This is what most of us in this country spend our time with. And the only explanation is we must want it, right? Even the most reasonable people have their pet theories about specific personalities and the challenges of our time. One writer this week even went so far as to say that the United States, and by extension the West, has become like Pakistan or other third world countries in the number of conspiracy theories embraced, viewed, and repeated, and that become almost, the truth, quote unquote, the truth. Theories that become political truisms. So if that is what you want, don't listen to me because I don't do that. Then, of course, there is the worldview question, because there is a real world and real world problems. What is your worldview? What is your idea of the way things are structured in life? How are things really? How things really are, and how much our worldview enables us to make sense of things or not. And where does our worldview come from? Is it part of our upbringing or our education or our ongoing education or work experience or life experience? What I have seen is people arguing back and forth with statements that have no basis in reality. This has not changed since the election. This has continued, shouting and making claims, none of it supported with fact. And when facts are challenged, or when you challenge the source or ask the person making the claims or assertions to prove what they're saying, they go away, they throw up their hands, and they make some aspersion to your intentions, or they just give up in some other way. This is not a behavior limited to people on the right or the left. It runs through our society. And when we start talking about issues, and by extension politics, we are just not able to have a civilized conversation about politics or social issues in general. Why? And I think it's because we're too invested in the outcome. We feel that we have to defend someone, usually a personality like a president, or we feel we have to defend a political flag, an issue, or position on an issue. In the meantime, our government is doing something completely different. Their decision-making process is coming from a completely different perspective. And I want to talk about that in this show. And I want to talk about the fact that on at least one level, we are at the end of a political era in this country and the beginning of another, and perhaps in the world as well, because you're hearing reports that, quote-unquote, populism is going to take over Europe and so forth. My own personal feeling is this is even more than the beginning of the Obama era, but we might look back in 50 years and say that some of it began with Obama, because things are changing and they're starting to change significantly. It's become clear to me, it's become clear to many people, that we all may not completely understand the issues and the forces that are at work, and that we are either in a tumultuous time and we don't know it, or we are entering a much more tumultuous time. That is a time of great change in the world and in America, politically and socially. socially and economically. So we're going to talk about all that, because as citizens in what is supposed to be a free society, and we're supposed to have control, we're supposed to have input in what our delegated leaders do, it's important for us to really understand the forces at work and the changes that are taking place. So we're going to talk about that. Coming up, while the rest of the media is telling you what kind of president Trump is going to be, we're going to take a moment and talk about the forces of change in the world next. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. If you want to hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
I'm the sun and the air, all the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I am the sun and air, but nothing in particular. You shut your mouth, how can you
back in the studio. So in this show, I got some mentions in for yoga, which is pretty weird to get into the radio show, but I'm glad I did, because I get to talk about Hydrus whenever I talk about yoga. And I have had a great, we're doing this with this challenge at the yoga place, which is 20 classes in 30 days, which is pretty easy if you do it every day, but it gets super competitive. And I think I talk about at one point in one of these segments, I talk about how yoga is not supposed to be competitive, but it is. And generally competition makes you better. But I'll tell you what's really cool when it comes to just trying to have a great practice every day, and this is being hydrated, and that's where Hydrus comes in. Doesn't matter what you do for exercise, whether you cycle or do CrossFit, lift, or some kind of competitive sport, or you go hunting, or you're doing cross-country skiing, you need to get hydrated. And the thing is, if you hydrate before exercise, so if you just drink water before exercise, you don't get fully hydrated until 30 minutes in or so. And if you're doing yoga, for example, in a hot room, or you're doing SoulCycle or something in a hot room, by the time you get hydrated, you're going to be really struggling. Hydrus is a new high-performance beverage that uses exclusive nanosome technology to get critical electrolytes into your muscles with unrivaled speed and effectiveness, and there is no sugar. Hydrus will help you take it to the edge, and that's what it's all about, and I love it. I've been using it for a long time, and it works great. Join the performance hydration revolution. Visit HydrusPerformance.com. That's HydrusPerformance.com, HYDRUS. You go to that website, HydrusPerformance.com. You'll get all kinds of information about Hydrus and information about how to order Hydrus. Try it and let me know what happens for you. HydrusPerformance.com. Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. For all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. So, while the rest of the media is overanalyzing the speeches of the weekend, we're going to talk about the world. We're going to talk about a change of time. We're going to talk about trends a little bit. Because with the arrival of President Trump on the scene, we are definitely passing from one political era to another, and there's going to be different faces at all the top agencies and the White House, and there's enough fodder there for the media to talk about for the next year, right? Because you have new initiatives that are going to spark different kinds of conversations, new alliances will emerge, old ones will fade, and some of the faces and voices you've become used to seeing and hearing are going to fade into the past as we roll on through the significant turning point that I feel goes far above and beneath politics in this country. Now, this is just my opinion, and I am not trying to predict the future. I think that a lot of this is predictable from extant trends that we've been talking about for a long time, and I've been talking about a lot in politics and in the podcasts. And again, I hesitate to claim that these are earth-shattering conclusions, because for people in the know and for people that talk about this stuff all the time, It's really not earth-shattering anymore, and I'm humble about making these so-called, they're not predictions, they're just discussions of current trends more than anything, and I'm humble about it. So I'm not trying to tell you that these are earth-shattering conclusions, but some of the trends in our society and the rest of the world are significant, and they are not driven by something the media has become fond of calling populism and even nationalism, these ism words that are used as faux analysis by these commentators. What is going on is these forces are driven primarily by technology and the movement of more and more of the world toward individual freedom and decentralization. Sometimes it happens in fits and starts. Sometimes it happens poorly. Sometimes it happens brilliantly. And then there is the pushback by those who hold power against the idea of individual freedom. Now, when I say that, if you're in the United States, you might have the image of bad people against freedom as being jackbooted thugs wearing black like Italian fascists or black and white images that harken back to the early 20th century. I'm not talking about that because the people who hold the power today are not jackbooted thugs. They're not likely to be. Most of the time, they are highly educated, highly experienced bureaucrats, functionaries, and appointees in the world's generally unelected councils, which have great power over business and banking and governments and those who support them. So it's people wearing business clothing and wearing cologne and eating $500 dinners, right? So we're talking about the central banks, the international councils, the government bureaucracies, and international bureaucracies. And some of these councils are state or local agencies, national agencies, and most of the people who run them are actually well-meaning people. These councils and institutions that have been, you know, grown up, that have been created and grew up in the post-World War II period, and especially in the post-Cold War era, were created, I believe, with the best of intentions. The World Bank, the UN, the Met Council, if you're in Minnesota, these development councils and so forth. They all served a purpose in an industrial era. This is the one thing that has changed most significantly. The institutions that many of us have become comfortable with and know well, whether we like them or not, have may have ceased to actually function in the way that they were intended. In fact, I think they have ceased to function in the way that they were originally intended. The thing is, those running these institutions, I don't know that they fully understand that they have ceased functioning in the way that they were intended, or maybe they do. It's hard to tell. It's hard to impart, you know, intent with people that you don't know. The thing is, what it amounts to in some cases, not all, but in some, is rule by the elite classes through financial means, social controls, and in some cases, literal control of governments by unelected bodies. I believe all these movements towards self-determination, like Brexit, for example, are not driven by nationalism. They are driven by a reaction to control by unelected bodies and control by the elite and the desire of individuals to self-determine. These are very powerful themes in our society today. There are too many agencies controlled by shadowy forces that have too much impact on the lives of individuals across the world. Some places it's worse than others, but now, of course, in our country, we have elections, people can get involved, and yet you see the same dynamic here as well. Individuals are seething at what they perceive as the impact of unelected councils, politicians who do not pay attention to the quote-unquote people, and for the first time in a long time, the tools to transmit that anger and to amplify that anger are available to people through social media and so forth. And politicians and movements that understand how to use these tools, it can seize the imagination of individuals, and they literally can move mountains. But what is at the root of all this? The way we work, what we do for work, the output of our work, how we live our lives, how we meet and interact with the most influential people in our lives, all of that is being touched in ways by technology, and in big ways by technology. Most of it's unseen and unheard. It is tasteless. It is odorless. It's a cloud of change, like a fog you can't see, where fog comes in a landscape and obscures things that we could see and understand clearly just a little while ago, and it makes it kind of almost a magical atmosphere, that early morning fog sometimes that you see. There are many examples. The biggest transportation company in the world today doesn't own any cars. The biggest hospitality company in the world today doesn't own any hotels. What is sure to be the biggest retailer in the world today, soon, if not now, doesn't really own any retail space. Components are made in one place, they're shipped somewhere else to make bigger components that are then shipped somewhere else to be assembled and then shipped to market somewhere else. How do you calculate an import or an export in that environment? New manufacturing plants are built to the ballyhoo of the media and government, who are in the business of creating jobs. But in the end, the plants actually only employ a few because they're almost all robotic. People are beginning to fear something called artificial intelligence, even though artificial intelligence has been around for a long time at one level or another. Now, this is a short list. And I've often talked about it. This is the development in sciences, and it's the empowerment of the individual, because most of this technology amplifies the individual. As the individual becomes more capable, more productive, we push back against the constraints of institutions designed by a bygone era for a bygone era. Now, in the United States, we're lucky because at least we have the least oppressive form of government, although that's a matter of opinion. This is the biggest and most significant trend in the world, this movement towards individual freedom and power. It is bigger than any politics in any one country. It is probably heralding a period of growth and change unprecedented in human history, the technology combined with the freedom. And it is just beginning. So rather than sit here and talk about what somebody said about the new president and what somebody said the new president's going to do, I think it's really more fun to talk about these really huge trends that we know are taking place. So coming up, taking advantage of these tectonic changes means breaking free of government interference forever. And that means you, Republicans. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show.
There is freedom within. There is freedom without. Try to catch the deluge in a paper cup. There's a battle ahead. Many battles are lost. But you'll never see the end of the road while you're traveling with me. Hey now.
Back in the studio live, getting ready for segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. You know what I thought about this morning? I thought about winter cars. So if you have a brand new BMW or Mercedes, maybe you don't want your brand new awesome Mercedes or BMW to get wrecked in the snow. What you need is a winter car like a Crown Vic or a Ford Police SUV or a Ford Police sedan or an Impala V8 or an Expedition or Yukon. They're all available at xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUV. They get them ready for you at xgovernmentcars.com. If you need a car, you need a loan, and if you have a job, you can get great credit terms. You're approved for credit. And of course, X Government Cars takes trades. So it's a great spot to find a great winter car to save your Mercedes or your BMW or your brand new car from the ravages of winter. And they pay the highest values every day for trades without all the bull. They also have the 3-day love it guarantee exclusively at X Government Cars. So here's what you do. Get your butt down to X Government Cars, all the great former government vehicles and work trucks, vans, SUVs, and so forth. They're now open in Golden Valley at 2420 Nevada Avenue North, 763-777-8782.
XGovernmentCars.com.
Okay, here's segment three of this week's Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. To sign up for the Bob Davis Podcast newsletter and for the rest of the podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. So, yeah, we talked about the general coverage of the inauguration and the new administration a little bit. A lot of surface and lots of reaction to surfacey things, a lot of reaction of personalities, and still not much substance. I don't expect that to change. You know, we talked in this show about the biggest force for change, which I think is the biggest trend in the world, and that is a trend that's influencing all politics and all leaders today, more so than probably any other factor. This is technology and the development of new decentralizing technologies. And I think it's the hardest thing for people of a certain age to understand. And I think the key there is the fact that for most of the 20th century, almost all technology was geared to centralizing production and marketing. I've done a lot of podcasts about that. I've talked a lot about it. If you want to find out those podcasts, you just go to the BobDavisPodcast.com and do a search on it. We had great manufacturing, shipping, and transit centers in this country. We had big cities built on manufacturing, shipping, transportation, and management. We refer to this as the 20th century, the early 20th century. These beautiful cities with skyscrapers like Chicago and Detroit and New York, of course. And these spawned huge industries, including not necessarily manufacturing, advertising, for example, or communications, transportation, you know, and so on. And we created a huge middle class, and I've talked about the influence of these factors before, so I don't need to go through this all again, as I said, although I love talking about it. I could talk about it all day long. But for 30 years, that has all begun to change. So we're talking about going back to the 1980s. That's when things really started to change. And now that change is really starting to take hold. In North America and throughout the world, technology has really started to dig in the process of decentralizing all those things that used to be centralized. They call this disruption, right? And it is miniaturizing things that still need to be centralized. So you're looking at less labor, you're looking at more technology, and you're looking at the amplification of the individual because one person does more, you know, at almost every company. We have gone from a mass sort of market where one size fits all to a market of mass specialization where everybody can have their own personal fit style type system, their own personal trainer, whatever you want to call it. This revolution has been developing for a long time. And while this has been going on, our governments have remained locked in the late 1940s and early 1950s. So we're talking about the 1950s, 1960s, 1940s, kind of post-World War II, Cold War style government structure. Now, I'm not talking about the constitutional structure of our governments where we guarantee freedoms and liberties. I'm talking about the bureaucracies of our governments. Many of the computer systems, from aviation to the systems that calculate economic data, including the equations used to estimate things like exports and imports and population growth, date back to sometime in the 1950s. This is true. The philosophy of those running these agencies, though, also dates back to the 1950s, where we had a world that is never coming back, no matter how much nostalgia we might have for it. We have a big, expensive federal government with huge bureaucracies. We have big and expensive state governments. We have big and expensive county and local governments, unelected councils implementing centrally planned concepts for cities and towns, regulations of all kinds on all kinds of services and products and demands for licenses for this, that, and the other thing, all sorts of central observation of citizens. Now, we have this problem in the United States, but it's most visible in Europe, where an unelected national government is able to issue currency and control the trade and growth of individual nations, not to mention a myriad of other personal issues in the complex cultures of the countries that make up the EU. When you look at it that way, is it any wonder that countries like Great Britain and others have begun to push back against the European Union? And here in the United States, at the end of a long process of international adherence to these unelected bodies and trade regimes, we have another kind of pushback that I talked about in the last segment, this seething of people against what they feel is too much government or the wrong kind of government. And this is something that the media has labeled populism, but it's really not populism. It goes long, far, and more beyond a political tactic that harkens back to the late 1890s. It had to do with the gold standard and farmers in the Midwest. So this idea of the word populism drives me crazy. A political party and a president elected promising to bring the jobs back and to build a wall to prevent immigrants from coming into the country and so forth, illegal immigrants, by the way, claiming conservative principles, promises to make America great again. So the question is, what is required to do this? number one. And number two, what is required in this new world? In a time marked by the development of technologies and industry that demands free trade and communications, less regulation, and substantially less government, as well as less labor, what is required to thrive in this new atmosphere? Can big government Republicans and big government Democrats deliver less governance and more freedom? Because that's really the key question. Will big government Republicans and Democrats selflessly reduce their power in an effort to free capital and individuals to build on this base of a technical revolution, which really is unprecedented in human history? Consider the way politics is covered by the so-called news media. The influx of social media's fake news and conspiracy theory substance, spawning commentators and people who are unable to discuss substance, whether it's because of a lack of attention span or the lack of being informed, and the growth and power of charlatans thriving on misinformation. Do you think people will be able to work their way through this challenge if this is the base of information that they get? And yet, it's almost unavoidable because it's a fact of life. 150 million people checking out social media on an hourly basis. Or will we fall victim because of this to emotional manipulation, even when it's only so that you watch longer or click through or listen longer? And this gets to the key questions that we have in this. And there's so many pieces of all this because some of it's dark. You know, some of these methods can be used to manipulate people. I was just commenting and thinking about this incredible growth in just 5 or 6 years of social media. Yes, Facebook, you know, existed 8 years ago, but it was just a new thing, you know, 8 years ago. It's only in the last 5 or 6 years that we've seen the growth of the social media. Instagram didn't exist, and Twitter did not really exist to the degree that it does today, as well as Facebook. So all of these new sources of information are brand new and they're massive. I mentioned in the last segment that these large companies, you know, the biggest hospitality company, Airbnb, doesn't own any hotels. Biggest transportation company, Uber, doesn't own any cars. And Amazon is, if it isn't the largest retail company in the world, it soon will be. They don't own very much retail space. And they're also doing things like they're opening stores where there are no checkouts. You just walk through, buy your stuff, and leave. And use your smartphone device. These are brand new ideas, and they are just beginning to deliver huge results. And this is just one area. This is just in media and how much it's changed, and it's diminished the power of broadcast media. It's diminished the power of the cable news channels. You have millions and millions of people watching things. I always talk about the YouTube channels where you have people that are doing YouTube channels that have, you know, millions more subscribers than CNN's weekly audience. And when you tell people in the broadcast industry that, they are shocked. And so the key question for navigating all of this now and in the future is, what do we actually know? How do we know it? How do we learn? Why do we fear competition? Why do we fear change? These are really important questions going forward. So coming up, as the new administration begins and the old one fades, some strategies for coping next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show.
Put on your red shoes and dance the blues. Let's dance to the song.
Just ahead of segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, thanks again to xgovernmentcars.com, Minnesota's only dealer specializing in one-owner, professionally maintained government fleet cars, trucks, and SUVs. They've got work trucks. They've got the SUVs, as I mentioned, the Expeditions and the Yukons, the Ford Crown Vicks while they last, the Ford Police Sedans, the Dodge Chargers, the Chevy Impalas with the V8 engine. So it's a great place for a winter car or for a primary car year-round or SUV or work truck. xgovernmentcars.com. And thanks again to Hydrus. HydrusPerformance.com is the website. HydrusPerformance.com. This is the new high-performance beverage that gets great electrolytes into your muscles with no sugar. It's awesome. I use it every day for yoga, whether you cycle, CrossFit, lifting, yoga, competitive sports. It's great for wrestling. We have tennis players using it, CrossFit athletes. Don't forget HydrusPerformance.com. That's HYDRUS, HydrusPerformance.com. Also, the digital sponsor, the Bob Davis Podcasts.com. For pilots, you want to fly safe, especially on takeoffs and landings, and Alpha Systems makes the revolutionary angle of attack indicator for that. The bottom line is Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. Click on the Alpha Systems banners if you want more information about Alpha's revolutionary angle of attack indicator. They're at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Okay, here's segment four of this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Hope you're loving the 80s bumpers. Here we go. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. Welcome back. Some big concepts in the last two segments, and I love that. It's better than, more fun for me than talking about who said what and what's going to happen tomorrow, because I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And yes, I have been on a self-imposed news blackout, kind of, in the last few weeks. I come back every now and then to check things out. I did the last few days. And it is depressing to see the same old crap on social media, on the media in general. Everyone seems like they're inside the big machine, so to speak. What is the new president going to do? Why is it going to work? Why won't it work? We're going to predict the future and tell you what you're supposed to think before it happens. And yet, most of the time with most administrations, events have more influence in the long run on the performance of the administration. And it doesn't even matter the best and the worst intentions. It comes down to the character of those administrations and what they decide to do. And I can't possibly predict what may happen with this one. Some people are very concerned and worried. They may not have supported Trump or Republicans in general. And of course, it is the worst thing that has ever happened to the country from those people's perspectives. Just as many Republicans felt the same way regarding the advent of the Obama administration. And yet, we are all still here. Now, I will engage on these issues as time goes forward, but I am not going to be defending the new administration or its policies. I am not going to be attacking the opposition for whatever it does or says on a day-to-day basis. I have resigned myself to the realization, and I don't know that this is even a resignation. In some ways, this is an epiphany. That this is, in fact, politics as usual. It's probably been like this for decades and years, and this is the way it works. And in general, it is a distraction from the actual substance of what's going on in the world. Besides, the incoming administration, as we all know, is perfectly capable of defending itself, and they will have to defend themselves going forward. Personally, I think it is true that Republicans may end up being the most hard-pressed to defend what the new administration does and to defend Trump personally, because I suspect what he does will surprise many and many Republicans. Certainly, if he succeeds in doing some of the things that people have thought needed to be done for a long time, reducing corporate taxes, repealing Obamacare, reducing regulation, and eliminating large numbers of government employees at minimum, there might be some positive knock-on effects of those changes. Anything that reduces government power, as far as I'm concerned, is a good thing. But building walls, trade protectionism, spending trillions on infrastructure are not necessarily quote-unquote conservative ideas. As I said at the beginning of this show, companies that did not exist even 10 years ago are some of the biggest companies in the world. I mentioned in the last segment that social media now has billions of viewers and doesn't own a single transmitter. Companies that have the same disrupting effect are being created or growing in every industrial sector in the world economy and in every service sector in the world economy. And in so many cases, what we end up having to do is to adjust to a new world. Now, younger people have less difficulty, I would think, adjusting to institutional changes. But all of us are going to have our thinking and our ideas, our worldviews tested in the coming years. And it won't be because of the Trump administration. It's because things are changing. We're also going to experience the benefits of new technologies, whether it is the driverless car, personal flight, the use of peer-to-peer services, downloading podcasts, tailoring all your consumer products to your own needs, untethering, and so on. On the eve of the Trump presidency, this leads me to some key questions about our lives that I think about a lot, and maybe you will. And these actually have nothing to do with day-to-day politics. What do we actually know? I asked these questions at the end of the last segment. Well, I find I'm an experiential learner. I can hear about something 100 times, and until I do it, until I experience it, I really don't understand it. How does your experience in life inform you? How do you know what you know? Can your life experience be applied in the world today? And in what ways can it, and in what ways can it not be applied? And what new things do I have to learn in order to be competitive and happy and thrive in this new environment? How do we know what we know? Again, collective life experience, book reading, education, trying out concepts we've learned about in the real world. And then there's this whole question of human nature, whether human nature changes. And what do we really know about human nature? You know, when it comes to being worldly, when it comes to dealing with human beings, and I'm saying this to myself, are we worldly or do we live in one little corner of the world, and is that a problem? Sometimes people who live in one little corner of the world are very worldly. They just have a different view. Sometimes we refer to those people as old souls, right? How do we learn? And I think this is really important with this new technological world we're living in, and I love this one because, again, I learn through experience. It's why I travel. Probably one of the reasons I'm thriving in this tumultuous time is because I may fear changing jobs or careers, but in the end, I will take the plunge because it usually means a new experience, and I end up liking that. I also learn from reading, and reading on a wide range of subjects as well as a wide range of material on the same subject. So if I find something I'm interested in, I'll start reading different books on that same subject until I exhaust my interest. I do not think we learn from social media posts, cable television news coverage, and while we learn from the spoken word, like books on tape, it should be a jump-off point rather than an end. In terms of understanding issues in depth, you have to read, and you have to read source material, as I also have talked about, because that's what gives you context to understand things, like working in an industry, doing different things, gives you context to understand the industry as a whole after a number of years. And then I come to this other thing, because I hear this a lot today. China took our jobs, or, you know, Mexico is coming up here and stealing all of our jobs or whatever. Why do we fear competition? And I will use yoga as an example. Yoga is not supposed, I do yoga a lot. It's not supposed to be competitive, but it does. It does often get very competitive. And one of the things I've learned is that which does not kill me makes me better and stronger. Nobody likes to compete at first. Everybody wants a market to themselves. Everybody wants to be the man. But when you compete, you get better. You learn to socialize. You learn to create more quickly and to find whatever advantage you can. And it's hard. It's not easy to compete. But you learn to appreciate your competitors as well for their contributions to what you're doing. There has never been a country afraid to compete. And I don't understand the fear of competition in the United States today. Why do we fear change? This is another one, because this has been a country that's always, this country has been built on change. Why do we fear change? I don't like change. I like things the way they are. I like my coffee the way it is. I like my deck. I like places to go that I go to every day. I like the familiar. We all do. But some things have to change, and sometimes things change because, as I said, they have to. And sometimes things just change. How do we react when things change? I get frustrated or angry. I complain. I get fussy. What do you do? But then eventually you accept and you adapt and you move on to something that you like better. These are things that happen every day. We learn, we grow or not, we change, things change, and the world changes because it has to. And in general, I think we hope that our contribution helps things move along and get better. And, you know, we all like to bitch and moan. We all like to complain and not to pound on social media too much. But I think there's a lot of bitching and moaning and complaining on social media. And I think that's probably primarily what the forum is best at, and it's what the charlatans feed on, and it's what the conspiracy theorists feed on, and we all, of course, enjoy a good argument. At least I do. Maybe I'm unusual in that respect. We all enjoy a good argument. We all like things the way we like things. But I want to say this because I think it's really important to say this, because I've also been through a lot of change in the last 3 or 4 years, and I went through a lot of changes when I was on the road covering the campaign. And I've learned a few things about myself, and I know a few things about myself, and I think you're probably very similar. I don't think I'm unusual. The truth is that even though I'm set in my ways and I believe certain things, I also want to make things better, and I want to see things get better, and I want to live in a world where we can get along and that we can be happy and free, and we can work and trade with each other without necessarily judging each other negatively, and get to a point where we can actually appreciate each other for what we do. And this is a process. The world is constantly moving in a particular direction in fits and starts, and each of these new ideas that is introduced creates all sorts of ripples. Sometimes they're not so good. Sometimes they're great. Just because there's a new president doesn't mean it's the end of the world. Just because the new president doesn't hail from your particular political perspective doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It's just the president. As I've often said, let's hope that we're moving toward this goal in the next few years of making things better in general. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. That's going to do it for this week's Bob Davis Podcast radio show. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, and TuneIn. Thanks for subscribing at iTunes and off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for checking out the audio stream at thebobdavispodcast.com. And I always do appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and all that stuff that you do on social media, Facebook, Twitter, and my favorite, Instagram. Also, thanks for the donations at thebobdavispodcast.com for diesel fuel for mobile podcast command, figuring out where I'm going to head as we get into spring 2017. And I guess we'll start in going forward on the Trump administration podcast, talking about some of the things that they're going to do, as well as some stuff that's not political. And that's what the travel stuff is all about. So thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts and the Bob Davis Podcast radio show.